are both correct. Congratulations. You won our grand prize.
And that is?
You got some leftover Rübschlager bread from about 25 years ago. We found a case of it in back.
Nothing like petrified bread.
Yeah. Still delicious. Still delicious with a dip. The singer, of course, is Irene Cara. And that was the Academy Award-winning song. Can you believe it? 1980. Which, to me, 1980 doesn't sound that long ago.
No, it doesn't, but it is.
But you do the math.
There are the two.
And it's slightly depressing to me. Because it just seems like yesterday. I remember it so well. This was right around the time that I first met Schwani, in 1980.
And, 81, actually, but that's close.
You know, in the same era. And Schwani would come to the radio station with, his sweatshirt, cut. And his knee socks.
Boombox.
Boombox. He was like the living embodiment. He would sit in the old newsroom back at the station that we worked at then, WFYR, Fire Radio.
No, it was CFL.
Was it CFL
first? Yeah, it was CFL. Yeah.
CFL.
Yeah.
He'd sit down at his desk and someone would pour a bucket of water on him. You were really into fame, Shawty. I remember that.
It was not Gatorade. It was water.
No, it was water. No, just like in the movie. He was a welder. He had a part-time job as a welder. I remember back when we first started together.
That was my day job because I worked overnights on the desk. At WCFL.
Right. And then during the day, he would go do welding. No, I don't even know what that means.
Yeah. Speaking of 40 years, it won't be long, June of this year, when we will have indeed known each other for 40 years.
Now, how do you know that?
Because I started.
Did you write this down in your book, Met Dean Richards Today? How do you know that?
Because I started in June of 1981, and I didn't know you before I came to the city, and so it's going to be 40 years this year.
Wow. We should do something.
And you're
special.
Right. It doesn't seem like a long time ago, but it is.
It doesn't. We should do something special for the anniversary.
Well, okay, then we do the show at the bowling alley like we've been talking about.
I don't know if COVID protocol will allow me to stick my fingers into somebody else's bowling ball.
With you and trying on other people's shoes that were just worn
never gonna happen.
At the bowling alley.
Never once have we had Kevin Most say, don't try on other people's shoes. But even way before COVID, I've always had a problem.
Were you a little flipped out by that?
Then? It's gross.
Yeah.
It's disgusting. Well, you go to the bowling alley and the kid behind the counter, he's 14, number one, and he, gets the can of alleged disinfectant and it's psst, psst.
We didn't even have that when I was
and
a kid.
That's supposed to be like, now it's safe to put your foot into that grossness that somebody just bowled 9 frames. I don't want to be more graphic, but
we didn't even have a disinfectant when I was a kid. You went to the bowling alley, they gave you the shoes, and that was it.
Yeah, right.
So, may have used them foot powder or something like that, but that was the extent of it. Well, what you could do? You could go buy your own shoes and then wear surgical gloves to pick up the ball when we go bowling.
I'm going to say that's going to cut down on the momentum of my massively strong...
The fingers will get stuck in the ball. Down the alley with the ball.
I was thinking more the glove would get stuck in the ball. But
you see that? Whoa!
Much, much funnier image of me getting stuck.
Schwani!
I'm going to get you! Yeah, maybe if I get my own ball and shoes by then. I would say that's fairly unlikely to happen. But we should celebrate as long as you're keeping track of the dates.
Yeah, it was the first week in June.
Wow, you even know the week.
Yep. Yep.
Impressive.
Andy, what do you get somebody on the 40th anniversary? Is there...
Curiously enough, 40th anniversary is the bowling ball.
Wow.
It worked out just perfectly.
Imagine the coincidence on that.
So we each get our own bowling balls with our names engraved in them.
Right? Yes, with their name etched
with the little sparkles on them.
Wouldn't that be nice if I gave you a bowling ball and you gave me a bowling ball?
That would be an exchange bowling balls. And that's as far as I'm going to go with that.
Kind of weird. But somehow completely appropriate at the same time. Well, we'll work on that. We'll get right on that like we have every other project.
Yes, there are other project that has gone by the wayside.
Hey, I don't know if you know, today is Oscar Sunday.
Oh, that's right. The
93rd Annual Academy Award.
And a ceremony unlike any other.
Right. Union Station.
Two locations, yeah.
Two locations in Hollywood, one in London, one in Paris. They're not going to do musical numbers during the show this year. They're going to do the musical numbers on what I am calling the pregame show.
Ah.
Normally they do red carpet, because there's not going to be a traditional red carpet this year. So instead, they're doing a special, you know, featuring the diversity of the Oscars and, you know, lots of side stories. But among them will be the performances of this year's Academy Award nominated songs. That's going to happen between 5:30 and 7. Then the award show is at 7 o'clock. And then they've got a post-game show also. Something that's going to go on after the show. So it's going to be very different. The whole broadcast is going to be different. That said, most of the people that I've talked to this year said, I have not seen any of the movies. I am not even remotely interested in the Academy Awards this year.
Only because it's been so different.
Yeah,
I think that's part of it. But also I think part of it is that the movies this year are not really what you call, you know, slam dunk blockbusters. You know, they're kind of artsy films and, you know, things like that, which tend to gather smaller audiences than, let's say, King Kong and Godzilla were nominated. Now, that is something people would tune in for, to see that award be handed out.
Or like Titanic 20-some years ago.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the big movies that everyone went to see, like nobody went to see. I mean, the movie going this year is, you know, completely different. So I think there is even less interest in the Oscars this year. But, you know, it's an annual event. It's something that people like to watch on TV, I think. So we'll cover, you know, we'll talk about what we think will happen tonight. I've got my predictions. I'll be sharing my A-list interviews with the nominees. I've talked to almost all of them through the course of the year on Zoom this year, very different than past years, but we'll share those interviews with you through the course of the program today. And if I were a betting man, I would say that Schwani has put together a far-flung forecast having somehow to do with the Academy Awards today. Would I be correct on that?
No, you wouldn't. But it is in conjunction
Can
with...
Can you put one together in the next few minutes? Is that possible?
It is in conjunction, however, with what we've been watching in space here in the last week or so. Given Ingenuity, the helicopter that... I didn't get the phone call from you, by the way, on Monday.
No, you were supposed to call me.
Early in the morning.
You were supposed to call me.
Oh, I was supposed to call you?
Yeah, I slept through it.
The fact that the Ingenuity helicopter on Mars successfully lifted off and back, and then we have new astronauts that arrived at the International Space Station here via SpaceX. Hmm. So all that going on. This is in conjunction with all of that.
Okay.
You don't sound interested.
No, I want to wait for you to, you know, lay it all out on the table.
You know, here I was thinking, boy, oh boy, Dean talks about the space stuff so enthusiastically.
Right, he'll be so excited about this.
He's excited about it. And this, what do I get? Okay.
I thought it would be about the Academy Awards. So, if you don't have time, it's okay. We start off with a correction on today's program. Several texts coming in going, Dino, Flashdance was the welder, not Fame.
Oh, that's right, with Jennifer Beals.
With Jennifer
Beals. Jennifer Beals, yeah. Yeah.
Fame was the show about the arts school, the arts high school. But Schwani's still dressed up as... he still was a welder and a dancer on the side with the bucket of water.
He was like 3 years before his time.
Yeah, I did get the movies mixed up. But that what I said about Schwani is completely true. Another text, interestingly, has come in saying from the 847, maybe I'm old like Schwani. Well, There you go.
And who else?
We could stop right there.
I was going to say, that's it.
Huh? Who else?
Maybe I'm old like Schwanny, but I appreciate that he says accident when he does the traffic report rather than crash the way other traffic reporters say.
See? Thank you very much for that.
What's the difference?
Accident, just not really much of a difference. Accident, I guess, is just a little more formal rather than just a crash. A crash can mean a number of things, but an accident would specifically imply two vehicles or more getting into crash together.
Two vehicles crash.
Accidentally. So there you go. Thank you for that text.
Has anybody been...
I'm glad I am appreciated by...
I don't understand what the difference is.
They're occupying the same space at the same time.
Yeah. The difference.
Well, just formality. That's all I can say. Formality.
All right. Well, nice that your relatives are texting in this morning. nice to hear from the Schwanny family.
I guess that was my cousin that was texting.
Nice to hear from your cousin, Schwanette.
Schwanette.
Checking in. Dave and the Schwanettes. Which brings us to that portion of the program that we know is not about the Academy Awards today. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, moms and dads, kids of all ages, it's time once again for your far-flung forecast, the fascinating compendium of information presented each week by your host and writer. Not interested in the Oscars, apparently.
I didn't say that.
Dave, accident-prone Schwanny.
Well, that's true. That part is correct. Accident-prone is correct. And today we go to Marshfield, Missouri. Or do you say Missouri? Marshfield, Missouri.
Yeah, Oscars not happening there.
No. Population 6,633. Hmm. And goes back to the mid-1800s. It's in the south-southwest portion of the state and actually is along old Route 66. So that's one reason why I brought it up. Another reason I brought it up.
Do people still drive the old Route 66?
Oh, you bet they do.
Do they?
When we drove it in 2009, not only did we meet people from all over the U.S., we met people from four foreign countries.
Because they wanted to drive the
just
legendary...
Just to come to Route 66.
To get their kicks on Route 66.
You got it, yes. Including a couple from Sweden who made this their honeymoon trip.
Wow.
Yeah.
Hey, honey, look at that. There's the giant ball of twine I've heard about.
They rented a gigantic Harley-Davidson motorcycle.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, that's cool.
And went from Chicago to, we met them in Texas, I think.
Mm.
And they were doing that. We met some people from Brazil that were here, France.
Interesting.
Poland. All from these different countries to
just wanting to drive
Route 66,
the famous Route 66.
Exactly. Yeah. Now, why did we bring up Marshfield, Missouri?
I was trying to divert you from that.
Because it is the home, the birthplace of a man named Edwin Hubble.
Oh.
Does that name do anything for you?
Yeah, he should have a telescope.
Yeah, he does have a telescope named for him, and it was on this date, and it was great. Back in 1990, that the Hubble Space Telescope was put into space and had some problems initially with the reflective mirror in there. They had to fix it. And then a couple years later, a space shuttle crew went up to fix that, and the result has been just unimaginably amazing photos from that space telescope.
They fixed their reflective telescope, the mirror,
right,
and also put words on it that say objects may appear larger than.
I would think there were some objects in space that are pretty, pretty large. Yeah.
I remember when those images started coming back. It was really quite amazing.
It really was. Yeah. And there is a connection, by the way, to Edwin Hubble to Chicago. He studied here at the University of Chicago.
Hmm.
So he is also a person who was came up with a theory about how the universe is expanding, continually expanding. So, Marshfield, Missouri, the birthplace of Edwin Hubble, who was named the Hubble's telescope, went into orbit today in 1990. But Marshfield, Missouri, sunny and 47 today.
Right. Not the Oscars.
Not having to do it. I'm sorry.
Nothing happened.
That'll be next week.
Perfect timing.
Perfect timing.
That
right?
seems about
Perfect.
Right.
WGN. Count on me like 1, 2, 3. I'll be there.
It's 9:36. This is Dean Richards, Sunday morning.
I need it, I can count.
Marathon man, my longest day of the year.
3, 2.
Do a little radio show this morning, cover a little Oscars tonight, process it all, and then regurgitate it to you in recap form tomorrow morning on the WGN-TV Morning News. Looking forward to having some fun with that. In the meantime, we always look forward to our visits with Dr. Kevin Most, Chief Medical Officer, Northwestern Central DuPage Hospital. Kevin, happy Oscar Sunday to you. I'm sure you have a whole big day planned.
Yeah, I do, Dean. And, you know, even though it's only, 45 degrees, shortly after I'm done with you, I'll be on the golf course.
Wow, look at you. So, but you go out even when it was snowing. Aren't you one of those go out with the orange golf ball when it's freezing and snowing outside?
Hey, you know, it's fresh air. It's good exercise for you.
So. Yeah, what's a little frostbite among friends?
That's right.
So, you know, the Johnson & Johnson vaccine continues to be probably the number one subject of all things COVID. And, you know, now it's being taken off of hold. And as you told us last week, you always thought that this was perfectly safe, that the numbers were so small of people being affected by this, far less than other reactions that people are having to other drugs. So you obviously are, you know, 100% for this decision to bring it back.
Absolutely. You know, especially this vaccine for a couple of reasons. One, as we've talked, it was tested against the variants. Two, it's a vaccine that does not need the super low temperature storage. It can be given out of a doctor's office, which is so important right now as we start to get to vaccine hesitancy. And three, it's very inexpensive and it's the safe way that we have given vaccines forever. So anybody who's like, oh, I'm afraid of these mRNAs, the Johnson & Johnson and AstraZeneca are the classic ways we've been doing vaccinations for decades. So I'm still a big fan of it, and I hope people, you know, do the risk-reward kind of math and realize that the reward is way higher than any risk.
Yeah, I heard a statistic this week that said that not getting a vaccine, in other words, you know, not getting a vaccine period or a Johnson & Johnson vaccine, if you were scared of that, that the risks of getting blood clots as a result of getting COVID-19 are higher than if you were the very minute possibility of getting a blood clot as a result of Johnson & Johnson.
100%. If you want to really put it in perspective, we're talking about 2, we'll say, per million got a blood clot from the Johnson & Johnson. 150,000 per million of individuals who get COVID will get a blood clot.
Wow.
So put that into perspective. People say, no, I'm not going to get it because I'm afraid I'm going to get a blood clot. You have a much higher chance now of getting COVID, and your chance of getting a blood clot just went through the roof. It's night and day.
Yeah. So, you know, hopefully people will get over this, although it's amazing. I mean, I think some people were just looking for an excuse to not get a vaccine in the first place. I've noticed that in conversation, you know, with people. Just some people don't want to get vaccinated for some reason. But more and more people are vaccinated now. And I guess starting tomorrow, people will be able to walk in to get vaccinations that you in some places will not. You won't even need appointments anymore. Can you explain that to us?
Yeah, correct. You know, all the mass vaccination sites in Cook County will allow walk-ins without an appointment. So if I'm not mistaken, I think there's about 15 different sites. So certainly within everyone's reach of whatever neighborhood they're living in that's listening here in the Chicago, in the Cook County area. So that is good news and, in my opinion, bad news, right? We've hit 44% in Illinois have gotten at least one dose. If we're already at a place of vaccine hesitancy where supply is outstripping demand, then it's a little concerning. So hopefully it's still just the hassle factor and it's going to be easier to walk in. But we're seeing clinics now that are not filling. And now that's another reason why getting the Johnson & Johnson vaccine into the hands of the primary care doctors, where they can have a discussion with a patient one-on-one to explain the importance of it as well as the risk-reward.
Explain a little bit, once you have your vaccinations, whether it's your single vaccination of Johnson & Johnson or the double vaccination from Pfizer and Moderna, what protections do you have at that point? What does that allow you to do? Because I think there's a lot of confusion still about that. Some people think they are super men or women because they've had the vaccine, and that really is not the case.
Yeah, you know, they're very well protected. If you look at the chance of hospitalizations or deaths once you've been vaccinated, you're very well protected. We don't know if you can spread it. And it's really, I think, the most important thing you just said in that was the one dose of Johnson & Johnson or the two doses of Pfizer and Moderna. We are seeing a lot of people not show up for dose number two. I mean, that is getting to be one of our biggest concerns. Millions of people across the country have skipped the second dose. You'll get some protection from the first dose, but you certainly won't get to that 90-95% protection. So when people say we're going to have more breakthrough cases, we certainly will with individuals who only received the one dose.
Here is a topical question with the Oscars tonight, 708 area code. Do you think it will be safe for Oscar nominees to be amongst each other without masks in Los Angeles?
You know, unless they really take a good tally of who's been vaccinated, no, they should still be distancing. They should still be, you know, wearing masks if they have not all been vaccinated. And I certainly hope this is an opportunity to send a very strong message when people look at people that they look up to, who often are actors, how they are acting. So I would hope that people are wearing masks. I hope that they're distanced appropriately in the crowd. And I hope that you know, during the Oscars, Dean, you know, there's a lot of political messages that are made. And I certainly hope that the political messages that may be made around COVID are more towards the positive than the negative.
Right, right. There have been fewer political messages, but yeah, a lot of times it's been about politicians or, you know, policies and things like that. And, you know, if there's one message that anyone should be getting across, it should be that. Now, what I had heard, because the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences, they're trying to make this look as normal as possible. So they're saying that when people are on camera, they will not be wearing masks. Hopefully they won't be near anybody. But also that before anybody is allowed into any of their venues, that they will have had to have taken three COVID-19 tests over the past couple of days. Does that make it safer?
Absolutely. 100% makes it safer, especially if they do three over a period of time. A single test, although we know the accuracy of them is getting much better, you can also still be in that 2 to 5 day window. So if they're getting three negatives prior to coming in, that certainly is a very strong message to how the importance of testing is if we are going to be in large groups. So I would be okay knowing that, you know, everybody, and if they said that, you know, at the beginning, just saying, hey, everyone here has been tested three times, right, and that's why we're acting the way we are, then that would be much more appropriate.
Yeah, I still would like to see them wear masks just for the message of we want to be as safe as possible, even though they've been tested. Don't you know what I mean? I still like the, if for no other reason it sends the message, I care about not spreading any germs to you.
Exactly. That would be such, you know, I care about you. I care about the person next to me. As much as I care about my own personal health, wearing that mask, even after vaccination, shows that you care about mankind or humanity. I don't care how you want to look at it.
Right.
But you can look at it that way, and you also can look at it, this is the only way we're going to slow this spread. You know, look what's going on in India. I mean, I hate to say it, but they're in a world of hurt right now.
Yeah.
And with vaccination rates of about 2, 3, 4, 5%, they have a long road ahead of them.
Yeah, I think that, you know, the mask wearing, the distancing, that's a much more powerful message that if they're going to be sending any messages tonight on the Oscars, that's what it should be. 847 area code texts, is there a correlation between having the Moderna shot and getting shingles 5 days later?
No. You know, shingles, everyone should know, if you've ever had chicken pox, that's the virus that causes shingles. It's in your body. Whenever you're under stress, a big amount of stress, or your immune system is down, shingles can pop out. Certainly, if you hit an age group, you know, seniors, you know, over the age of 60, please get the Shingrix shot. It'll protect you from shingles. It's very painful, but there's no correlation between the COVID vaccine and an outbreak of shingles.
Let's take a quick break, and we'll come back, get to your phone calls for Dr. Kevin Most and more of your texts, number for both. This is Aileen calling up to talk with Dr. Kevin Most from Central DuPage Hospital. Hi, you're on WGN.
Thank you, thank you, thank you for taking my call. Hi, Dean. Hi, Dave. And then, Dr. Most, I really need your answer on this, please. I have not seen my son for 18 months. He lives in Lake Tahoe, California. He's a paramedic. He is double vaxxed. I'm allergic to Moderna and Pfizer, to one of the ingredients in the suspension. I was just about ready to get the Johnson & Johnson, and they canceled the appointment because it was pulled. He's flying in on Tuesday, staying for a little over a week, and I wanted to find out. I had COVID January 2020, but I came through it just fine, thank God. He had it in December before it was called COVID, and now I'm kind of worried that, can he bring it with him from flying in? One, we're going to mask up, but can I catch it? Even though, because he's double vaxxed and I'm not, I'm a lot spooked.
Sure. So we'll go step by step through it. He's double vaxxed, so he is protected himself personally. Can he spread it? We still don't know that. The early studies show that they probably can't spread it. However, for you, being allergic to it probably is polyethylene glycol, I would imagine, is what you're allergic to.
Yes, that's exactly. Common, it's anaphylactic for us.
Yeah. So you getting the Johnson & Johnson would be great. The unfortunate thing is the timing. Even getting that, let's say you could get it today or tomorrow, your immunity still would not be there. That being said, you had COVID. If you had COVID and tested positive, you still have some natural immunity. We know that. So you're in a pretty good place right here with him being totally protected. If he wears a mask, you at least have some antibodies, and getting that Johnson & Johnson as soon as you can is your perfect storm right there.
For how long?
I hug him?
Sure, you can hug him, yes.
Yep. Oh, God, so much. I don't want to get upset, but that was my biggest fear. I wouldn't be able to grab him. 18 months was too long, and it's been kind of a...
Of course.
And being a paramedic, the things that he's seen with COVID out there is just brutal.
Sure, of course.
But, thank you. I was so sure.
Aileen, let me just ask a couple of little follow-ups here. Kevin, how long might Aileen have those natural antibodies?
Well, we don't know that exactly right now, but she just had it in January, so we know that it still is probably going to be there at least 6 months is what we expect. And for her son, who had it and then got vaccinated, he's even more protected, as Aileen will be as soon as she gets that Johnson & Johnson, because we see the response for individuals who had COVID and then got vaccinated. The response is 6 to 10 times stronger than what we're seeing in people who have been COVID naive.
Aileen,
the Johnson & Johnson, I'm sorry, Dean, Johnson & Johnson vaccine, Dr. Most, I'm 60, so it's okay I can't say okay because that limits other things, but we're okay that age group for J&J?
100%.
For the blood clot issue?
If you're concerned about the blood clot portion of it, you have to remember that those were all women under the age of 48. So they went from, high teens up to 48. They didn't see anybody over that age. And for every million doses of Johnson & Johnson, for women over the age of 50 like you, we prevent about 5,000 hospitalizations and 600 deaths. That's pretty good odds, and that's something that I certainly would take, especially knowing your allergic symptoms.
So good luck,
absolutely,
Aileen.
Absolutely.
Good luck. Good luck.
If you were in front of me, I would hug the stuffing out of you, honestly. I feel so much better. And, Dean, you too. Thank you. I don't want to cry on the air because I feel foolish, but thank you so much.
I think we would all understand. You can't wait to hug that son of yours. And
I can't wait. It's 18 months is far too long.
Right,
And he's been so exposed to it. So thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Good luck with all of that. Here is Rick, 312-981-7200. You're on WGN. Hello.
Hey, quick question. I'm a regular blood donor. I had my second shot this week. I'm just wondering, like, when is it good to start giving blood again? Or I don't want to seem, selfish, but am I getting rid of my antibodies? Or after the 2 weeks, am I safe to give again? Or that's my question.
Yeah, what's the story with that?
You can give blood right now. And it's interesting. Individuals who had COVID in the past, and we were asking them to donate blood for that convalescent plasma that we would use for other individuals, we're not even doing that anymore. All the blood banks have plenty of the convalescent plasma. They don't have enough whole blood plasma platelets. So please give blood. And really, right now, the impact of you getting the shot and you giving blood will not make any difference in your immune response. You will still be fine.
Thank you much.
All right. I was curious about that myself. Good question. Rich, you're next on WGN. Hello.
Yes, good morning. Good morning, Doctor. Good morning, Dean.
Hello.
My question is, in the news this past week, there was actually quite a bit of coverage about folks that had gone to the Marianos in Aurora and didn't receive the second vaccine was different than the first. This
Correct.
Happened to me in March at Walgreens,
yeah.
where initially I received the Pfizer shot, and then 4 weeks later went for the follow-up shot and was given the Moderna shot. Didn't realize it initially, and then I just kind of took the card and the packet of information, and okay, I was feeling, and I felt fine with both shots. And then a few days later, I realized, oh, I looked at it and I said, wait a minute, this is different than, so I thought, well, okay, went back, checked in with the pharmacist at the...
And that data will certainly come out as we look at, should certain demographics be getting Moderna? Should certain demographics be getting Pfizer? And that will be really important as we go to the need for a potential booster.
Dr. Kevin Most, Chief Medical Officer, Northwestern Central DuPage Hospital. Hit him straight today, Kev. Thank you.
You got it. Take care.
Is one of the songs nominated for Best Original Song for the Academy Awards that are tonight. Leslie Odom Jr. With the song Speak Now from the movie One Night in Miami. The other nominees include Fight For You by Her from Judas and the Black Messiah. Hear My Voice, music by Daniel Pemberton. From the Trial of the Chicago 7, from the Eurovision Song Contest, the Story of Fire saga, the song called Husavik, and also from the movie The Life Ahead, La Vida Devante Asi, the song, I hope I'm pronouncing it correctly, IOC. And that's written by Diane Warren, a very, very noted songwriter. I think this Leslie Odom song has a chance to win tonight.
I like that.
Yeah, it's a really beautiful song. In this movie, One Night in Miami, Leslie Odom Jr. plays Sam Cooke. The movie imagines what happened at a meeting that really did happen between Sam Cooke, between Malcolm X, Cassius Clay, and there was one other who is escaping me right now. There were four. What would have happened? What could have happened in this meeting? His performance as Leslie Odom Jr. really kind of steals the motion picture. We talked with Leslie Odom when the movie came out just before Christmas time, and this is what he told us.
Well, he was there to... There are different schools of thought of how you bring about change. There are the people that think you you know, change things from the inside. And there are people that think, you know, that's foolhardy, that there's no way you'll ever do it in that way. And, you know, so Sam is there really to present another side of an argument, another side of a possibility to Cassius. They're doing it all for Cassius's benefit, I think. Yeah, Sam was a businessman. He made it his mission to put food on the table and money in the pockets of people that he cared about.
I'm so interested in watching a movie like this, and these performances especially are so riveting because you want to capture the essence of the person. You don't want to do an impersonation, I don't think. And you want to bring a little of what's inside of you to this at the same time. Am I right about that?
Oh, that's so well said. That's exactly right. You should teach acting. No, that's it is a marriage of all of those things. You want to, and it's hard to, you know, it's slipping away all the time. You grasp it and then you lose it for a second. You grasp it and you lose it for a second. The my greatest asset for this, for the role that I had were those three other actors, you know, Kingsley Benadire, so exceptional, and Eli and Aldis. You know, we were giving each other the business in that hotel room, you know, really going at each other and forcing each other to dig deep and be as honest as possible.
Yeah, it's a pretty compelling movie. The other fourth person in this hotel room, this meeting that really did happen back in 1964, but they don't know really what was said. They imagine what was said was Jim Brown, the NFL legend. But Leslie Odom Jr. is nominated for Best Original Song and also for Best Supporting Actor. So he's up for two tonight. I think Daniel Kaluuya is going to win that category. He's up against Daniel Kaluuya, Paul Racy from Sound of Metal, product of the South Side of Chicago, Lakeith Stanfield, and Sacha Baron Cohen from Trial of the Chicago 7. As I said, we'll recap all of the Oscar winners for you tomorrow morning. In just a minute, we're going to check in with WGN-TV legal analyst Terry Sullivan. Terry Sullivan is just one of the best legal analysts in the business. And there's certainly been a lot to talk about of things happening in courtrooms lately. We'll go over some of those things when we come back next on WGN. What you want to say and let the words fall out. 10:23. It's Dean Richards Sunday morning, WGN. So much has been going on in the news. It has been exhausting keeping up. You know, some people just turn away from it. They don't want to hear the news anymore because they say there's nothing but bad news. I feel like you have to keep up on what's going on, even if it is not pleasant to hear. We've had stories of shooting after shooting after shooting. And, of course, the big news this week was the verdict that came out of the Derek Chauvin trial. For that reason, I wanted to check in with Terry Sullivan, who, of course, you know from the WGN TV Morning News as our legal analyst. He's also the president of the Sullivan Firm Limited. Terry Sullivan, my friend, it's so nice to have you on the show here. I miss you, my friend.
Yeah, me too, Gene. Good to be back on. It's been a while.
Yeah, it has with the pandemic. Terry, before the pandemic, Terry would be at the TV station, you know, a couple, two, three times a week, depending on what was going on with the news. But nobody has been at the TV station for the past year plus. But it's nice to have him on Zoom calls and today on the phone line. Let's start off with the Derek Chauvin trial, Terry. What's going to happen next? He was found guilty on all three counts. Walk us through the process of what will happen next.
Well, it's pretty simple. He's going to be brought back in, and he will be sentenced by the judge. Now, the judge has three charges, and they're all the way from 10 to 40 years. But in Minnesota, they have what's called sentencing guidelines, such as in the federal courts, where the judge will get recommendations from various places, including their probation department, who will make an investigation of the whole thing, so to speak. And they'll come back along with others, and make recommendations as to how much it should be. Right now, on the toughest one, it appears as if the guidelines will call for something around 12 and a half to 15 years. However, the prosecution has said that they are going to ask for the judge to add some things on there because that's the way Minnesota law allows. Now, whether Judge Cahill will or not, he's got to take certain other things into consideration, such as other people seeing the crime, juveniles seeing the crime, whether it was exceptionally brutal, those kind of things. And then it'll be up to the judge to make the finding. Now, I would think that the judge is going to do one sentence, that all three will run concurrently, because there's a legal term called merge, M-E-R-G-E, where the crimes, if they're the same, if they're for the same exact crime, then in fact the penalty has to merge, and they would run consecutively, in other words, at the same time, right, instead of one or the other.
So do you think that there will be any consideration for the fact that he was a police officer, either working in his favor or against him? Because
you hit it right on the head. I'm quite sure that the prosecution is going to try to introduce that he was a police officer, that he violated his oath of office, that he did not act like the kind of police officer he should be. On the other side of the coin, I suppose the defense is going to come out and say, you know what? Yes, he is a police officer. Yes, he's done how many good years of police work? And I think that it's going to work both ways. So I don't think him being a police officer is necessarily good or bad for sentencing purposes. I think the judge will see through that. I think this is a fine judge.
What kind of effect do you think that there might be in that this was such an incredibly high-profile trial that had international attention? You're no stranger to this. When you prosecuted John Gacy, it was the same kind of thing. That everybody in the world was interested in the case that you worked.
Well, our judge had to take things into consideration in that case and in the Patty Colombo case and a couple of others. But at the same time, I think that this is one of your better judges that you can get in the state court, and I'm quite sure that he's going to do what he is supposed to do by his oath, and that is to sentence according to the law. And I think that's exactly what he'll do. You know, Dean, you have an interesting thing. You say that everybody's seen this case, and that's probably true, and it is worldwide. But I have a question for you. What do you think would have happened? Is that all right?
Oh, yeah, of course.
What do you think would have happened if there were no tapes in this case?
If there was no video, it could have very well, been a completely different verdict. In that case, it's, he says versus she says, whose word do you take? The fact that this was caught on video, that so many of these cases now are, everything is caught on body cams, or, a neighbor, somebody is, filming it, shooting it, videotaping it. That's like a whole new dimension now, isn't it?
Not only might there not been a conviction, and you hit it right there. You would have had some people testifying that yeah, he was brutal, and other police officers, I'm quite sure, would have taken the stand and said opposite of what maybe they said there. That in fact, it was a different set of circumstances that he used the correct force. But I think even more so, there may never have been a charge brought had there not been any video.
Sure.
The attorney general stepped in, but the attorney general certainly stepped in because there was the video, and then they went and prosecuted the case. But as you brought up, there are videos everywhere. There are cameras everywhere. And it's going to be different for us lawyers, I think, especially for prosecutors, because we saw this with the advent of DNA, and one of the concerns of prosecutors is that every jury is in such cases is expecting that there's going to be DNA, and there's not in most of the cases. Now our jury is going to be expecting there to be video.
Video, yeah.
And if there's not a video, are they going to take a different side to the story and in their verdict. It's a big change for my profession too.
Well, you know, the other big case in which video plays a key role is this Adam Toledo shooting of the 13-year-old boy that was shot by a policeman. A lot of focus is on the one still shot of Adam Toledo with his hands up in the air being shot when literally microsecond before that, he did have the gun in his hand, tossed it away. I don't want to get into, you know, the ins and outs of all of that, but in terms of what I wanted to ask you about, are criminals who are convicted of gun crimes, namely the 21-year-old Ruben Roman, who is alleged to have given the gun to Adam Toledo in the first place. He was in and out of jail on different gun crimes and was bailed out. There was an organization that bailed him out. Steve Bertrand had a very interesting interview with the organization that posted his bail and put this guy back out on the street again. What's the status of all this? I know that Cook County is, you know, trying, you know, they're overrun with people. They're crowded. They don't have room for everybody. But how do they work that to keep actual people who are, multiple gun crime perpetrators from being back out on the street and, giving guns to 13-year-olds again?
Well, that's what's going on right now with this bail reform. There's a statute that the legislature passed in relation to bail reform, and I'm quite sure and hopeful that, in fact, they're going to have to make changes to it because it just doesn't make any sense in a lot of ways. It was rushed through. It has the right purpose to it, but it doesn't protect the rest of society, and they're going to have to redo it. You have to have judges who are independent enough that they can set either a bond or no bond that is close enough for that. You know, Dean, one of the things that I'm not sure your listeners know of, but a lot of these gang leaders, such as this fellow who just got out, are apparently gang leaders. What they're doing is when they've got a gun, what they're doing is they're bringing youngsters with, such as this Toledo, and they're having them run with them and act like a big shot and a young gang member and all of that stuff. And then when it comes time that maybe the cops are on their tail or maybe they're being chased, they give the gun to the juvenile, knowing that the juvenile isn't going to be sentenced if he's convicted the same way that the adult is, especially this guy who already had a gun conviction. And if he hands it off to a juvenile, he knows that the most that's going to happen to the juveniles, he ends up in juvenile detention and gets out within a short period of time.
Yeah.
That's what the gang leaders are doing, and that's what I think anybody who's working on bail reform has got to understand, that you're not going to want to put these people back on the street. There's a lot of room in the county jail right now.
Yeah, well, that's certainly the allegation of what happened with Ruben Roman and Adam Toledo, for sure. It's going to be investigated even more. Terry, I'm out of time. I got to get the news, but I always appreciate talking to you. Really appreciate your insights on that. Thank you so much for joining us.
Well, I'm always glad, Dean. See you soon.
WGN-TV legal analyst Terry Sullivan. Sunday. I'll leave a slight pause there for most of you to go, who cares? Apathy about the Oscars this year, more so than usual because of COVID. But, a lot of the movies that have been nominated are not exactly what you call blockbusters, because there were no blockbusters in 2020 this year. I'll go down the list of Best Picture nominees in a couple of minutes, but something interesting could happen tonight. Glenn Close could break a record that she probably does not want to achieve. She got her eighth nomination for an Academy Award with her role in Hillbilly Elegy, Best Supporting Actress in Hillbilly Elegy. She could win tonight. I don't think she's going to win tonight. I did think she was going to win last year for Best Actress, and that was one of the big upsets last year. But if she loses tonight, she ties Peter O'Toole for the most times being nominated and never winning. Eight-time loser. Peter O'Toole is the only guy that has that distinction right now. But if Glenn Close loses tonight, which I think is going to happen, she will join Peter O'Toole in that elite club. Also nominated seven times without winning. Richard Burton and the great Geraldine Page, by the way, just for a little Oscar history. This movie, Hillbilly Elegy, is a very interesting one. About a very, very dysfunctional family that's gone astray. The son in the family breaks away from his rural family that you might call kind of a white trash family, really. He breaks away, he goes to medical school. Family problems bring him back to his rural small town, and he's right back in the situation that he grew up in, which was not a pleasant one. The movie was directed by Ron Howard, who usually can do no wrong, but boy, this movie just took a beating with the critics. I was kind of so-so about it. I thought it was a little stereotypical, but the performances were great, and especially Glenn Close's performance, along with Amy Adams in this movie. Just before the movie came out, I had the opportunity to speak both with Amy Adams and also Glenn Close.
I totally agree. It's the second time I've worked with him. I want to work with him again. I'll do anything he ever asks me to do. I think he's one of our great directors. And to think of his career, no one has had a career like Ron Howard in this country. And when you walk on a set with him, it's the second time I've done it, you know that he is absolutely prepared to be behind us, to help us reach the best performances that we can have. And he also has a great team of crew around him as well.
Yeah, Amy, do you? I saw you nodding your head there. I'm thinking you must agree all the way, huh?
100%. I've always wanted to work with Ron, and when this opportunity came up, I said, like, he does not disappoint. He is such a wonderful, Glenn has put it this way, he's a humanist in the way that he approaches the work, the way that he approaches his crew, his cast, everyone around him. It just becomes an incredibly supportive environment, which allows you to feel really brave and like you can, it's very collaborative, and it just doesn't mean you don't get worked hard and pushed to the limits. It just means that it's fun and exciting.
Is there a little bit of geeking out in the fact that he's Opie from The Andy Griffith Show and Richie Cunningham from Happy Days also?
Just amazing. I had this great story of he couldn't dance in the Music Man, so they had to shoot him above his feet. He was only like 5 or something.
Yeah. Yeah. I happened to flip on a rerun yesterday where he was singing Tootsie Goodbye with Aunt B yesterday. And I mentioned it to him, and he burst out laughing. He 100% remembered it.
As long as he has in this industry and to have as much success as he's had and to still operate with such humanity and humility is a real inspiration.
Yeah.
Great family man, too.
Yeah. A great guy all the way around. And, you know, really walking such a delicate line with the story, as you say, creating these brave characters without making them too over the top and caricatures, really. I credit him, but boy, that's on both of you for this. Glenn, what was that process like for you?
Twofold. Number one, to get the look right, I didn't want to be distracted by my own face. And also to learn from the family about this larger than life woman that they loved so fiercely and to do her justice. So, you know, we started with the look. We had wonderful pictures of Mama, videos of Mama, And then two, with meeting the family, asking very specific questions about body language and how she smoked a cigarette. Now, she was had a cigarette in her hand all the time, sometimes two going at the same time. Those are just invaluable, beautiful nuggets for an actor to just, you know, assimilate and try to do justice to this person who made such a big difference in her family.
Yeah, I just saw, you know, both of these performances as such brave choices on both of your parts to go into such dark places with this. Amy, did that attract you at all to taking this on?
No, it actually detracted me. I'd been sort of living in a dark place. I had done Sharp Objects. I had just done a film called Woman in the Window, which hasn't come out yet, but I did shoot that before this. And that was also a really sort of dark and challenging place. So I was actually looking to do something a little bit lighter. And when Ron presented me with this, I was a little hesitant. And yet when I talked to Ron and learned how he wanted to tell the story of this family and sort of the impact that telling this story could have on people, which I'm learning in speaking to people today, it's been really validating. And of course, getting to work with Glenn and everybody else. So Bev was a character that was challenging and also very rewarding to play. Yeah.
Glenn, I happened to notice while I was waiting, actually, to talk to you, that yesterday was the 26th anniversary of the opening of Sunset Boulevard on Broadway. Yeah. I don't know if you're aware of that, but I mean that's got to be one of the milestones of your life, I would think.
Yeah. So it's actually probably 27 because we opened first in L.A.
Oh.
Yeah, that character has had a huge impact on me as an artist.
Yeah, an amazing role, as are these. Thank you so much for the movie, for the chat. It's good to see you both. I hope you both have a wonderful Thanksgiving. Thanks to you both.
You too. Thank you.
Glenn Close and Amy Adams, we talked with them just before Thanksgiving time when the movie Hillbilly Elegy came out. Most of these movies, by the way, that are nominated, these performances, are all available on various streaming services. Not hard to figure out which ones. But Glenn Close is nominated for Best Supporting Actress tonight, as is Maria Bakalova. She played Borat's daughter in Borat's subsequent movie film. Olivia Colman is nominated in the very touching The Father, the Alzheimer's drama. Amanda Seyfried is nominated in the Hollywood story of Mank. I believe the winner will be Yoo Jung-yoon, who is the grandmother in the motion picture Minari. I believe that she will be the winner for tonight. When we come back, one of the actors nominated for Best Supporting Actor, who is from the South Side of Chicago. We'll get to that coming up next as we continue Oscar Sunday Morning on WGN.
.com. Saturday night at the movies. Who cares what picture you see? When you're hugging with your baby, let's roll in the balcony.
Oh, yeah, I remember going to the movies on a Saturday night. Some good stuff here. The nominees for Best Picture tonight, all of these pictures, the movie titles, by the way, Andy Mazur will incorporate into his 11 o'clock sportscast that'll be coming up in just a few minutes. How long would you say you worked on that, Andy? 4 or 5 weeks? Something like that?
You know, there's a couple that I've been working on for a while to try to work the name in, because they're not the easiest names to work into a sportscast. And some of them were just really, really tough.
Yeah, I say like the movie Minari. How do you work that
in? Oh, you'll see. That'll be the first one.
Mank. How do you work that into a
sportscast? Oh, you'd be surprised.
We'll find out coming up on Andy's 11 o'clock sportscast that he's been working on, as opposed to Schwani, who just slaps together the newscast every hour here on the show.
I will not dignify that with an answer.
People have said that we're on fire today for some reason. The text
we're line, on fire?
People are saying we're in rare form today.
Andy, did you work in Jaws by any chance on your...
No, this
it's
this
not 1975.
It's this year's nominees.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, people have said that we're on fire today. I can only account for myself. And I know what's up with me before the show today. We have producer Brendan filling in with us today. And he is, in addition to working on many, many shows here on WGN, also has a day job as a barista at Starbucks. And he talked me into having an espresso this morning. He was having an espresso, and he just shot it down. He took it like a shot. And I thought, well, I can't be less of a man than he is. I have to take an espresso. So I took a double espresso. I'm going to be twice the man that he is. And I think I'm like so caffeinated.
Oh, so that explains it.
I think the top of my head's going to blow off.
You have to put the seatbelt on.
Thanks, Brendan. What did you have? You walked in this morning fully caffeinated.
Oh, yeah. I had a... I walked in with five shots of blonde espresso.
And what's blonde espresso?
So blonde espresso it's a lighter roast of espresso.
Okay.
So basically you're getting it less acidic.
Right.
You're getting a different kind of flavor out of your, depending on the beans, and you're getting a little bit more caffeine.
And you had five shots in one drink?
Five shots.
You had it like an ice drink.
Yeah, it was five shots shaken with cinnamon and brown sugar, and then you pour a little oat milk on top. It's really good.
We should try those next week. All of us should try that next week.
I'll have to come, and even though I'm not producing, and bring everyone like venti brown sugar shaken espressos.
I just want to.
You guys will be bouncing off the newsroom too.
I just want to. I know how I am. I had about four sips of the double espresso that I was trying to drink this morning because I saw you down that espresso, and I thought, well, I can do that. And I couldn't. I had four shots and. Someone's going to have to peel me off the ceiling.
I'm going to go back for seconds pretty soon.
So,
well, you'll be wide awake for the Oscars tonight.
But then. I want to see you, Schwani, have one of these five-shot drinks, and I want to see how you are next week. Because I've seen what you can do with ouzo.
Oh, okay. Here we go.
Yeah.
Again,
here
we go again. Here we go.
I love it. I know what you can do with what kind of damage ouzo can do to you. I've seen that up close and personal.
All right, bring them in. That actually sounds like a tasty beverage.
Good, yeah.
Let's do it.
Yeah, I don't want to blink my eyes for the next 4 or 5 years. That's fine. It's fine with me. And I will be awake for the Oscars.
That's right.
The nominees for Best Picture, The Father, the Anthony Hopkins Alzheimer's drama, Judas and the Black Messiah, which is about Fred Hampton, that was the former chairman of the Illinois Black Panther Party, The Trial of the Chicago Seven, also with Chicago roots, about the trial that took place after the 1968 Democratic National Convention. Mank, the story of Hollywood screenwriter Herman Mankiewicz. Minari is the story of a South Korean-American family that moves to rural Arkansas. Promising Young Woman is a revenge thriller about a woman that goes on just a revenge tear for against guys who have taken advantage of women. Sound of Metal is an unbelievable movie. Unfortunately, I don't think it's going to win, but it's the story about a heavy metal drummer who loses his hearing. And, you know, when a musician can't hear, they lose their life, basically. It's a very touching story. And also nominated is Nomadland, about a woman whose husband dies, who's loses her job, the factory that employs almost everybody in her small town closes. The town, you know, really sort of goes belly up, and she decides to pack it all up, get into a van, and take off on the road and live on the road like nomads. That's why it's called Nomadland. And there are lots and lots of people who do exactly the same thing. And it's a very touching story. Some people have said it's depressing. I think it's an uplifting story of someone who has made a personal decision to live her life a certain way. And I think that that is going to be chosen as Best Picture tonight. And I've already said, I think Frances McDormand, who stars in this movie, is going to wind up winning the honors as Best Actress tonight. Coming up after 11 o'clock, we'll share some of our interviews with the nominees, including the director of Nomadland, Chloe Zhao, who I believe will win Best Director tonight. Also, Paul Racy, Southsider, big White Sox fan, big Blackhawks fan, who is up for Best Supporting Actor from the movie Sound of Metal. All of that and more is coming up this Oscar Sunday morning. for Sunday morning. Conversations with the A-list nominees throughout the morning here. I'll recap the whole Oscar ceremony tomorrow morning on the WGN TV Morning News. And, of course, on my regular segment with Bob Surratt between 8 and 8:30 over most of the same station. All right, so the nominees for Best Original Song 1984, Ghostbusters by Ray Parker Jr., from the movie Footloose, the song Footloose, and also Let's Hear It for the Boy by Denise Williams, Against All Odds by Phil Collins, Stevie Wonder's I Just Called to Say I Love You from The Woman in Red. Andy picked
Against All Odds.
Against All Odds, and Schwani picked the Stevie Wonder song, the actual winner of the Academy Award for Best Original Song in 1984.
I just called to say I love you.
Should know not to go up against Schwani when it comes to music.
I don't want to copy him, that's all.
If it's music that's nearly half a century old, Schwani is an expert.
I also happen to like Stevie Wonder.
This is a good song.
For over 50 years.
I like this song.
Yeah.
I think this was the song in, correct me if I'm wrong, in High Fidelity, the movie with John Cusack and Jack Black, where the suburban father comes in to try to buy a song for his daughter.
Okay.
And Jack Black just goes on, do you even know your daughter?
The movie won the Oscar for being from The Woman in Red.
Kelly LeBrock. Andy helped me come up with the name of
Kelly LeBrock, starred in the movie along.
And Gene Wilder.
Gilda Radner was in the movie.
Gilda Radner was in it?
Charles Grodin, Joseph Bologna, Judith Ivey, among many others. But that was a great year for music. That was one heck of a year for Oscar-winning songs. As Schwani's been reporting, this year's Academy Awards tonight will be very different. It's going to be broadcast from several different locations.
Unlike any other year.
Unlike 93rd Academy Awards. two locations in Hollywood, from the Kodak Theater, the Dolby Theater, where they normally do the Academy Awards on Hollywood Boulevard. And also the Union Station, is that what it's called there?
Union Station.
It's the big train station.
Downtown L.A.
Downtown L.A.
Yep.
They're spreading it out in two different locations.
A marvelous Art Deco building.
Yeah, I've never been there.
Oh, it's a beautiful building.
Never had any reason to go to the train
station.
My
friend took me over there. He gave me the tour a number of years ago, and I really just fell in love with that building. Yeah. It's really neat.
Most of those old train stations, like our Union Station.
Are like our Union Station, you bet.
Quite magnificent,
yep.
And Grand Central Station in New York. I have been there because I did some television reports there. That's a magnificent
building. That is a stunning building.
Yeah. Most of the old train stations are pretty cool. So they're going to do the two locations in Hollywood, one in London, one in Paris, for people who are nominated who are in Europe right now. And no host again this year. I think this is the third year, right, that there's not been a host. But it made me think about, who are your favorite Oscar hosts? You know, I talked to a couple of days ago. I did an interview with Billy Crystal.
I was just thinking about Billy Crystal.
That opening thing where you would sing the song about all the movies.
Yeah.
I missed that.
Genius. That montage, spoof montages that he used to do were absolutely brilliant. I'm going to go, as much as I like Johnny Carson, I'm going to say Billy Crystal is my favorite Oscar host. And, you know, there have been many. I'm curious, you know, if our listeners have, do they have favorite Oscar hosts, favorite Oscar moments? Remember the year that somebody was streaking?
I was thinking about that,
too. That's one of the most famous Oscar moments of all time. David Niven, I believe, was presenting an award, and while he was reading off the nominee, some guy with no clothes on.
And waved at the camera.
Right. The audience goes wild, and, applause and all that. And then Niven, being so quick, said, here's a guy who just, is getting some applause for his shortcomings. So I don't know if they told him ahead of time what was going to happen. I don't think so.
Oh, that's good.
But David Niven was absolute genius. Of course, when Marlon Brando won the Oscar for The Godfather, he didn't show up to the Oscars. He sent up in his place Sasheen Littlefeather, Native American who said that Marlon Brando is refusing his Oscar because of the treatment of Native Americans in film, and she made a statement, you know, about the treatment of Native Americans in general. So, you know, that's another classic Oscar moment as well.
Was it the Oscars that had Jack Palance doing the one-hand push-ups?
Yeah, with Billy Crystal.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they were in the, what was that
movie? City Slickers, right?
City Slickers, yeah. City Slickers they were in, and he came up there, and I don't know how old he was. I think he was about 75 or something like that then, and, you know, put everyone to shame by being able to do one-handed push-ups, one-arm push-ups. There have been some great moments. A lot of people on the text line this morning, I know people have been saying they're not going to watch the Oscars this year. One, because most people haven't seen the movies that are nominated because of theaters being closed, etc. Some people are just not interested. And, you know, a lot of the movies are kind of art movies, and they're rarely as, you know, the big kind of support for those kind of movies. But a lot of people on our text line this morning are saying they don't like the political statements that the nominees make or the winners make when they get up on stage and they make political statements. That really doesn't happen very much anymore. People who are saying that are judging from 10 years ago, 15, 20 years ago, when it was much more rampant. You know, most people might say a word or two, but they don't make big political statements anymore. That's a vestige of award shows past, so we'll see. Either way, I'm going to be recapping the who won, who lost. We always keep track of all the funny and unusual moments that happen during the show, so we'll see. It is going to be an Oscar show like no one has seen before, so if you decide not to watch it, we will have the recaps for you here and also on WGN TV first thing tomorrow morning. Let me take a break and we'll get back to our A-list interviews, including Paul Racy, who is phenomenal as the counselor who is he counsels a musician who has lost his hearing and is dealing with suddenly becoming a deaf person. It's a very, very touching emotional performance by this guy who was raised on the South Side, huge White Sox fan, huge Blackhawks fan. We'll talk with Paul Racy coming up next.
All I ask is if and when you cannot just sit, you turn yourself to the pen and paper that I'm going to supply for you. And I want you to write.
It's Paul Racy.
What you write, how you write, whether it's spelled correctly.
Playing a counselor.
It's just a big...
The leader of a group of people who have lost their hearing, either born deaf or have become deaf, counseling a heavy metal musician who happens to be a drug addict also, who comes to this rehab facility. Trying to learn to deal with living without his hearing, a musician who cannot hear, who feels like his life is completely lost. Riz Ahmed, who is nominated for Best Actor tonight. Unfortunately, I don't think he's going to win. I believe Chadwick Boseman will be the winner in that category. But playing the counselor is Paul Racy, who is from the Chicago area. He cut his teeth in Chicago theater, but has you know, taken on lots of character roles through the years. He is so great in this movie. His parents, actually, in real life, his parents were hearing impaired, so he learned sign language, American Sign Language. So he was, you know, very familiar with this process of what people go through and what they deal with. And when the movie opened just before Christmas time, we had a great chat with good old Southsider, Paul Racy.
So glad to be talking to you. I'm a Chicago born and raised White Sox diehard. So WGN is very close to my heart.
Oh, that's so nice to hear. We've got some changes coming up at the good old Southside.
Oh, yeah. I don't know how that's going to work out. I wish I could talk to you about that. But anyway.
Let's just freak out the producers of the movie and only talk about the White Sox today. Instead of this movie. This movie was so amazing in so many ways. Talk to me a little bit about the messages that you hope that people will take after they see this movie. I was so filled with emotion when I got done with it.
Well, it's because everything you see on screen is real. That's one thing. But the message is, you know, your hearing is precious. It changes. It can be life changing if you something happens to it. And that deaf people are not a monolith. Deaf people are just like you and I. They have to fight. My father in the 50s in Chicago had to fight 10 times harder for any dollar he earned, because there was no technology then. There were no interpreters. There was no understanding of the deaf population. Now, deaf people are proud to be deaf. This whole attitude has changed around. It's like, the only thing I can't do is I can't hear. Don't try to fix me. I'm perfect the way I am. That's not how my father and my mother communicated to me in the 50s. It was always oppression. And there's still a lot of oppression that happens to the deaf population. Misunderstandings about who they are and how they operate. So that, if that answers your question, I hope that gives you a little bit of light. This will bring some light onto that.
Yeah, it does. And really leads me maybe to my emotional moment during this movie, at the scene with you and Riz, where you talk about that we are a community of people who are hearing impaired, and we're not trying to fix ourselves. We're not trying to change. We're proud of who we are, and we're getting on with our lives. And man, that just hit me smack in the middle of the head, especially maybe in these times when, you know, people are so divided. Here is a community that just, they are proud of who they are and just want to be who they are.
Right. And the thing about the deaf community is if you take one step toward them, like you maybe learn a few signs or make an approach to them, they open up immediately. They want you to understand them. They want to be part of the hearing culture, if you will, which they're not. But now we've got closed captioning. We have devices. You know, we communicate with each other, you know, and so it's a lot better for them. But they're just like you and I. They have addictions. Lord have mercy. They have addictions just like you and I have. There are good deaf people. There are bad deaf people. They just want to be recognized for who they are.
Yeah.
You know.
So I gotta spend a couple of minutes with your Chicago upbringing. Did you grow up on the South Side, Paul?
Grew up everywhere. I grew up. I went to Blue Island High School. I grew up when I came back from Vietnam. I moved to the North Side, so I lived around Wrigley Field. See, I grew up in Oak Lawn, which is the South there, and then moved to where Wrigley Field was. So yeah, and I got interested in acting, and Steppenwolf was coming around at that time. Started my own theater company with 10 other actors called the Immediate Theater. And we were trying to model ourselves after Steppenwolf. And at that time, you know, Malkovich was doing this incredible acting. And I was a big fan. And he and a lot of other actors like him made me think that maybe I could do the same thing.
Wow.
Nothing like 99-seat theater. Am I right?
Yeah, right. The original Steppenwolf was, yeah.
Yes.
Tiny and doing crazy, unbelievable things.
Yes.
They're wrapping me up here, but our paths were very close. I lived at 111th and Western, yeah, right near Blue Island, right near Oak Lawn, then moved to the North Side, same kind of path. I still have not told most of my South Side friends that I've lived on the North Side, you know, for like 40 years now, something like that. They wouldn't understand.
I totally get that. That's funny. Are you a Sox fan or Cub fan?
I grew up a Sox fan, but working for WGN all these years, you know, we owned the Cubs for many years. So, you know, free tickets will turn a boy's head.
That's right. That's right. I'm down with that.
Yeah. Paul, it's great.
I root for them, but I'm still a White Sox diehard. But
right. When they play each other, I root for the White Sox.
I do that.
It's good to see you, and I hope we can chat in person one of these days. It's congratulations on a great film.
Thank you so much, Dean. Thank you very much.
His name is Paul Racy, nominated for Best Supporting Actor for tonight. That particular award, I believe, will go to Daniel Kaluuya, who has been winning every single award show for his performance in Judas and the Black Messiah. We'll share my conversation with Daniel Kaluuya coming up. Also coming up, it's an Oscar Sunday tradition. We always have some fun talking about food scenes from the movies. That blows up the phones every time, remembering your favorite food scenes from movies. If you want to get on the line now, that's great. 312-981-7200. We'll have some fun with that coming right up.
Customer ask for. Make it. Make the pasta. Make it. Make it. Make the pasta. Come on, let's go.
How can she want? They both are starch. Maybe I should make a mashed potato for on the other side.
Primo, look, don't, okay?
Because this is a scene from my favorite, one of my favorite movies of all time, period, but definitely my favorite food movie. It's called The Big Night from 1996. It stars Tony Shalhoub as an Italian chef. He is so particular. This the scene that we're listening to is they two Italian immigrant brothers run a restaurant, and somebody ordered food that he disapproved of, and as the very particular Italian chef, he wanted to talk to the customer to talk them out of their choice. The other brother is Stanley Tucci, who we now have has made us all fall in love with Italy with his CNN series, in which he goes to different regions of Italy and exploring the food there. But this movie, The Big Night, if you've never seen it, is just one of the most charming, wonderful motion pictures. It's about two brothers who run this little restaurant, and they're trying to get some attention to their restaurant. So they put on this spectacular meal, a big night, with the hopes that celebrities will show up at their restaurant and they'll get all kinds of attention for it. But I cannot recommend it enough to you. When we talk about our favorite food movies every year on Oscar Sunday, that's one of the movies I always bring up. That's one of the movies that often come up from lots of you as well. Favorite either food movies or scenes in movies with famous food scenes in them. There is, Cool Hand Luke comes up every year, in which Cool Hand Luke eats 50 hard-boiled eggs in 1 hour. There is Saturday Night Fever that comes up every time, where John Travolta is walking down the street eating double-stacked pizza slices. There is the movie Julia and Julie with about Julia Child, which is nothing but about movies. There is the movie Beauty and the Beast, and the song Be My Guest, where all the flatware comes to life and sings songs. So which one are your favorite food movies or favorite food scenes from the movies? 312-981-7200 is our telephone number. Here is someone on our text line saying the Food Fight movie from Animal House. Yes, indeed. You know that's a fantastic movie. Here is another saying, I'm not sure if this was my favorite food scene, but it had an impact. We have family of five kids, not much money, and pizza was always a treat. When Bill Murray dropped the takeout pizza early in Stripes, I wanted to cry. Here's another saying that their favorite food scene was Strawberries in 9 1/2 weeks. Yes, that was an intense one. There is the scene in Christmas Story where the mom is trying to get little Ralphie's little brother to eat his dinner. How about when they go to the Chinese restaurant? That's a famous food scene from the movie. Or, when the food explodes, lots of famous food scenes from that one. How about you, Kathy? You're on WGN. Hello.
Oh, hi, Dean. I love Big Night, by the way, but mine that I've never heard anybody mention is Dom DeLuise and Anne Bancroft were in a movie a long time ago called Fatso.
Yes.
And he was the younger brother, and she sent him to pick up the cake, birthday cake at the bakery for her son, Anthony. And when she opened the box, when he got it home, she looked at him and she said, "You ate the Oni." He took the piece of cake out that had O-N-Y on it and ate it on the way home.
It was that Anne Bancroft directed that movie, by the way, also.
Oh.
That was her directorial debut. When Mel Brooks's The Producers opened here in Chicago, it premiered here in Chicago before it went to Broadway.
Yes.
At the cast party after the opening night here in Chicago, Anne Bancroft was there, so I went up and said hello. And that movie Fatso had just been on TV, and I told her that I just saw your movie Fatso, and oh my gosh, she had such a kick out of that that you know, somebody saw her movie again and loved it. But that's a fantastic movie. It's about a guy whose eating habits are completely out of control.
And I have his cookbook, and he's got recipes from Anne Bancroft and Mel Brooks in his cookbook. A lot of other people too, but
really,
yes.
That's fantastic.
He thinks it'll make you feel better. It's called.
It's a really funny movie, really well done,
yes.
It's a movie that's about food. It's not just a food scene in a movie. It's a movie that's completely about food, called Fatso, with Dom DeLuise, directed by Anne Bancroft, and she also stars in it as well.
Yes.
I hope you have a great Sunday today, Kathy. Thank you.
Thank you. You too, Dean. Bye.
Here is Diane. You're on WGN. Hello.
Yeah. Hi, Dean. I did see that movie Fatso, too. It's pretty funny.
It's a good movie. Absolutely. What's your favorite?
My movie scene is from Soylent Green.
Oh, wow.
And it has that great scene with Edgar G. Robinson and Charlton Heston in that little dingy little apartment. And he managed to come up with some real food, and Edward G. Robinson's cooking the food and putting it on the plate, and Charlton Heston has never eaten that kind of food before, and he was just going crazy how wonderful it was.
Of actual food, not Soylent Green, which was...
Oh, yeah.
I haven't seen the movie in a million years, but wasn't that basically processed people?
Oh, yeah. Well, that was the whole thing about the movie. You know, Soylent Green is people. Soylent Green is people.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good one.
That was just a wonderful, wonderful scene in that movie.
Yeah.
So that's my choice.
Good choice, Diane. I appreciate your call. Have a great day today.
Thanks. Bye.
Thank you very much. 773 area code says Ratatouille. Oh, yeah, that's a fantastic. I mean, that's another one that's basically completely about food. The movie Chef. With Jon Favreau, says the 847 area code. It's a movie about a guy who chucks his, you know, real job and opens up a food truck. It's all about the food truck food scene. And that all started. I believe Jon Favreau has taken that beyond that. But it is the original movie that's called Chef is fantastic. That's a great choice. Thank you. Here's 815 area code that says Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. It's another good choice. Here is, When Harry Met Sally, of course, ordering lunch in the deli at Katz's Deli in New York City. I'll have what she's having. That is maybe one of the most famous food scenes of all time. Jim, how about for you? What's your favorite? You're on WGN.
Babette's Feast, one of our favorite movies, just a beautiful movie, and it's all about the sisters and the preparation of a great feast at the end of their lives. I don't know if you're familiar with the movie.
I remember seeing it a long, long time ago. Yeah, Roy Leonard, I remember, recommended Babette's Feast, and I saw it. It's got to be in the 1980s. Early 1980s, maybe 1990s. I don't remember.
Yeah, I mean, it's
really a long time ago, but it's a great movie. I agree.
And the one sister wins the lottery and prepares a real Parisian feast for family and friends. And it was, like I said, it brings back a lot of good memories.
Yep.
But well, happy Sunday and great show. And my wife and I are longtime loyal listeners, and you always make our Sundays a little more special. So thank you.
That's very nice of you, Jim. I appreciate that. Thank you. I hope you and your wife have a great Sunday today, too. Here are some texts coming in. Many favorite food scenes in Moonstruck. Here's another one that's one of my favorite movies of all time. People always ask, what are your favorite, what's your number one favorite movie? It's impossible for me to pick one. But I'll tell you what, Moonstruck is one of them. That's, you know, in my top five, something like that, along with The Big Night. There are many scenes in this text from the 574 area code. The restaurant scene at Bobo's, that's where the late, great John Mahoney, takes out all these inappropriately young women on dates, and they all wind up throwing water in his face in that movie. It's hilarious. That's such a wonderful scene and such a great movie. It says when Loretta Cher makes a steak bloody to feed your blood. The family at the breakfast scene while they're all waiting for Johnny Camerari. And Grandpa says, somebody tell a joke. Olympia Dukakis making the, I forget what they're called, when you take a piece of bread, you hollow out the middle, and you put an egg in the middle of it. There's a name for it. But that was the first place that I ever saw that. And, you know, they're all sitting around while Johnny Camerari comes back and says, I cannot marry you. My mother recovered. It was a miracle. That's one of the great movies of all time. But great food scenes. Michelle, you're right. Thank you for the text. Here is one from the 414 area code. Hey, Wisconsin, the spaghetti eating scene in Lady and the Tramp. Oh, you bet that was great. How about you, Robin? Favorite food scene from a movie?
My favorite food scene from a movie is the movie The Help.
Oh.
I will never, ever forget that one. Ever.
I'll bet you think about it every time you have like a piece of chocolate meringue pie or something, too.
You got it. You got it right on the nose.
That's hilarious. Have a great Sunday. Thank you.
You too. Bye-bye.
That night when you came over and told me that you would never... All right, well, you were there. You know what you said. Well, my compliment to you is... The next morning, I started taking the pills.
I don't quite get how that's a compliment for me.
You make me want to be a better man.
Wow, yeah, that was a great scene at a restaurant. Food scenes from the movies. The great Jack Nicholson and Helen Hunt from As Good As It Gets. Yeah, somebody texted that in. I had to hear the scene again. It's such a poignant, touching scene. We're talking food scenes from the movies for this Oscar Sunday. 312-981-7200. The 563 area code says, like water for chocolate. That's a good one. 630 area code, Myrna Loy and William Powell trying not to order the sea bass in the restaurant scene from the Thin Man movies. I'm going to have to go back and rewatch those. I don't recall that. 815 area code, the Odd Couple movie when Oscar, after he throws his plate of food at the wall, tells Felix, well, now it's garbage. I do remember that. Well, Jack Lemmon and Walter Matthau in the original scene. Here's the 630 area code saying, the pie scene with Jason Bigg in American Pie. Yes, that was a memorable scene. Juliette Binoche in Chocolat. What a lovely, lovely movie that was. Juliette Binoche and Johnny Depp starring in that one. 708 area code, remembering Uncle Buck's. The title character makes huge pancakes. Said, you should have seen the toast. I couldn't get it through the door. Great scene with the legendary John Candy. 312-981-7200 is the telephone number. Here is Gary. You are next on WGN. Hi, Gary.
Dean, I don't know if it's my favorite food scene, but the scene out of Tom Jones where Albert Finney's in the tavern instantly comes to mind. It's one of the most erratic food scenes I could I could possibly think of in the movie.
Wow. Yeah, that one comes up every single year that we've been doing this, all these years that we've been doing this food from the movie segment on Oscar Sunday. Somebody will bring up the Tom Jones food scene as well. I think a lot of people agree with you on that, Gary.
Okay.
Appreciate the call. Thank you very much. This is Terry next. You're on WGN. Hello.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
I said the scene from 9 1/2 Weeks. I think that was one of Kim Basinger's first movies.
Yes. They're talking about erotic food scenes. Yeah, that was...
Right, yeah. Good segue.
That was, yeah. We're trying to keep our erotic food scene calls all, close to each other. Yeah, that's a good
one.
Very
risky for its time.
It was extremely, extremely risque for its time, yeah. I appreciate your call. Thank you.
Have a great day, Dean.
You do the same. Thank you. 312-981-7200. Here is someone saying from the 815 area code, Monty Python's Meaning of Life restaurant scene where the man overeats and blows up. Just one moment. Just one moment. I think, was that the Meaning of Life movie, or was that one of the Monty Python TV episodes? I don't remember, but I do remember the scene. And of course, one of the great, food scenes, although it was definitely television. The famous spam, 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 spam. That was definitely Monty Python food scenes as well. Let me see what else we have here. We've got the diner scene. Oh, yeah, from Easy Rider with Jack Nicholson. Five Easy Pieces. Bringing back a lot of Jack Nicholson memories there, I guess. The chicken salad toast scene with Jack Nicholson. The scene from Red Dragon, where Hannibal Lecter feeds the guy his own brain. Okay. Yeah, well, I mean, legit, I guess you would call that a food scene for sure. 312-981-7200. Let's go to Larry. You are on WGN. Hello. You with me, Larry? No. Oh, there we go. Now we've got Larry. Hi, Larry. You're on WGN.
Hi, Dean. I love your show. I listen to you a lot.
Thank you.
I had two movies. One was the scene from Goodfellas when they're making the spaghetti sauce.
In jail. And, in jail with the razor blade, right? Cutting up the garlic with the razor blade. Yeah, classic.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty good. The other one, I believe the movie was called The Meaning of Life. It was a Monty Python movie.
Yeah.
And a large fella was sitting at a table in the restaurant eating.
Yeah.
He wanted one more thing, and I think it was something small, and he ate it, and then he exploded.
And he blew up. Yeah, we're just...
Yeah.
I was trying to remember if that was the Monty Python TV show or one of their movies. But you remember it from Meaning of Life, huh?
I think it was the Meaning of Life movie, yeah.
Yeah, was it a mint after this? This guy was
like
enormous.
Dinner mint.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll just have one more mint, and poof, he blew up. I remember it so well, yeah.
And the waitress is all full of stuff. And
it was
funny.
That is hilarious. I appreciate your call. Thank you, Larry.
Well, thank you for letting me talk. Thanks.
My pleasure. Nice to talk to you. This is Pat. You're on WGN. Hello.
Hi, Dean. I love the scene in Pretty Woman. She's trying to learn how to eat with all those utensils.
Oh, yes.
And then she's trying to get that, the what was it? It was seafood. And the shell went flying, and she says, slippery little devil.
Great movie. That's such a great scene. Such a great scene.
Yeah, it was a good movie. I loved it.
Appreciate your call. Here's the 312 area code. Here, what do you mean you don't eat meat? That's okay. I make you lamb from My Big Fat Greek Wedding. Classic. All right, here we go. It's 12:10. Dean Richards, Sunday morning on WGN. Still to come on the program today, Louisa Chu, who is a food and dining reporter with the Chicago Tribune, going to be talking about their latest food challenge coming up. We'll get to that. And I wanted to spend just a couple of more minutes on the food from the movies. Every year that we do this segment, the phones explode, the text line explodes. There are so many good choices. So we'll get just to a couple of more here before we move on and say hello to Julie. You're on WGN.
Good morning, Dean. I was thinking about the one from Public Enemy where James Cagney smushes the grapefruit into the girl's face while they're eating breakfast.
That has to be one of the earliest food scenes of all time, I would think, too. That I think that goes back to the 1930s, isn't it, the movie Public Enemy?
I believe so, but I just love that scene every time I see it.
Yeah. Have you ever wanted to do that, just smush a grapefruit in somebody's face like that?
Oh, yeah, many, many times.
I think I know what you mean. Nancy, have a great day. Thank you.
You too. Bye now.
That's so funny.
1931, Dean.
1931. Holy smokes. That's amazing. That's a classic scene. Classic, classic, classic scene. This is Nancy on the line, 312-981-7200. Hi, you're on WGN.
Hi, Dean.
Hello.
Hi. I love your show.
Thank you.
Just to start off, I have two scenes from the same movie, I'll tell you. It's the from the Christmas Story movie, and the first scene is where Ralphie's mom, they're getting ready for their Thanksgiving dinner, and she's just made a beautiful turkey. It's on the kitchen table. His old man's in the other room anticipating this wonderful meal. He's sitting in the living room. She goes in, probably getting the table ready in the other room. All of a sudden, the neighbor Bumpus's dogs get in the kitchen and start grabbing the turkey. And the old man hears them. He's screaming, hollering, chasing them, swearing, and gets them out the door. The next thing I know, I'm watching him. He goes over to the turkey on the floor, picks up a drumstick that's half eaten. He says, well, let's get dressed. We're going out.
It's classic. That is classic. Yeah.
And the second scene was when he takes them to the Chinese restaurant. The cook brings out that duck with the head on it.
Right.
And the mother screams. The father said he still got his head on. And the cook has this big knife and chops off the head right in front of him. Oh, my God. I laugh so much, I'll tell you.
And then don't the Chinese waiters all sing Deck the Halls or something, right?
Oh, yes.
Right.
Yes. And Jingle Bells. Jingle Bells.
It's a great movie. Two great food scenes from a classic movie of all time. Nancy, I appreciate your call. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dean.
Let's just wind these up here real quick. Dave, you're on WGN. Hello.
Okay, greetings. From A Pair of Aces, Kris Kristofferson, Rip Torn, and Willie Nelson. Rip Torn is making chili. Willie Nelson says, "I hear tell there are people that put lima beans in chili." Rip Torn says, "I'd kill any man that put lima beans in my chili."
That's fantastic.
And, just a TV cooking segment. I was on TV News. African-American woman cooking some steak dish. She says, "I like to put a little Asian flavor in my food." And the two anchors simultaneously say, "So do we." It's Linda Yu and Judy Sue on Channel 7.
Okay, I don't get that. All right, well, okay. It's weird and I think a little inappropriate, actually. Thanks for your classy addition to the show. Karen, you're on WGN.
Hi. I really enjoyed the 100-foot journey, especially at the very beginning when there's a mom that is taking her little son to the market to buy the food for their restaurant for the day. And they're all fighting over the last whatever it is. I don't even know, but it's a gorgeous piece of either fruit or a vegetable. And the boy takes one little bite out of it, and his eyes just close, and you could tell that he really gets that flavor. And the man sells it to the boy that understands, he gets the flavor.
Yeah.
So they sold it to his mom. And there's other parts in there where Helen Mirren, to see if they want to work at her restaurant.
Right.
She
just has them make one omelet. So
hard to go wrong with a Helen Mirren movie.
Yes,
they're sort of.
I enjoyed that.
They're sort of do no wrong. Appreciate your call. Thank you. And Jim, you're on WGN. Hello.
Hey, Dean. Great show.
Thank you.
The one that sticks in my head is a movie Tom Horn, and he's out. They're having a lobster dinner, and he'd never seen lobster before. And everybody's eating it, and he wasn't sure how to do it. And the guy looks over and says, "How do you like your lobster?" And he goes, "I'll tell you right now, this is the biggest bug I ever ate." That was great. One other thing, Dean. I'm not sure if you're aware of it or not, but Rainbow Cone is in Navy Pier.
That's what I heard, that they have a location there. I haven't been to Navy Pier in a long time. And I guess they're opening up their Lombard location. We were talking with Lynn Sapp, the owner of Rainbow, a couple of weeks ago here on the show, and she wasn't quite ready to confirm that they were opening a Lombard location, even though people were people were watching it being built and calling in saying it's there. But I think May 2nd or 3rd or something like that. Original Rainbow Cone that is 92nd Western in Chicago, has been forever the greatest ice cream in the history of ice cream, opening another location out in Lombard. I appreciate your call. Appreciate your rainbow love. And it's 1217 on WGN. All right. It's 1221. And we're going to see if we can get at least one or two more of our A-list interviews in here before we get to our food time show. One of the people tonight, I guarantee you, is going to walk away with an Academy Award is English actor Daniel Kaluuya, who plays a Chicagoan in the movie Judas and the Black Messiah. He plays Fred Hampton, who was murdered in his own bed back in 1969. This movie is about how Fred Hampton was betrayed by a member of the Illinois Black Panther Party, the movie Judas and the Black Messiah. And just before the movie opened at the end of the year, we had a talk with Daniel Kaluuya about this movie and the history and what it represents to the city of Chicago.
Yeah, because there's boundaries that you inherit as opposed to boundaries that you make, you know, and then the target is smaller. So it was such a new thing for me to kind of go, oh, wow, like, this is really, like, I can't do that anymore in the process. I have to kind of, and then you realize you got to surrender to it. And these aren't boundaries, they're guides. You know, it's like, oh, like, this is this. You should speak like that. Say that. That's the truth. Your interpretation from, I don't know, like 2019, a guy from living in 2019 looking at this isn't what's going to get you where you want to get to, which is like being a vessel for your story.
Were you at all familiar with Fred's story and the Illinois Black Panther story before you even got into this?
I was briefly, like, I'd hear about Fred Hampton just as a late teen, early 20s. And I did like a sprinkle Wikipedia look when I realized how young he was when he was murdered. And so then, so there was that. And then, with the Black Panther Party, I kind of would watch documentaries, read a couple books. But I always knew later in life I would want to take a deep dive into it.
So how did Fred Jr. Assist you, help you in, you know, your portrayal here?
Just activation, you know, reminding us of the stakes. There was one time that he took us to lunch. We had a whole hour with him and Mama Akua, Chairman Fred's partner. And he just spoke to us about the details, about who these people were, what do they did, what they do, the stories that you never hear, you know? Just reminding us of what we're doing here and why we're doing
it. When I watch the movie, you know, I'm just the parallels of what is still going on in the world today is startling to me, that this was really a pretty long time ago. And not that much progress really has been made. Do you agree with that, or do you think that we've come a good distance since 1969?
I mean, in terms of like what the Black Panther Party, one of the features of the Black Panther Party that I really love is the independent school and the independent self-education that they went on. And I feel that's gone. I don't see that a lot. I don't see people out there speaking from themselves and speaking from what they've been told to speak or what makes them look for them. And so in that sense, I think that can be the seed of the prejudice and the bigotry that you do witness around. Well, that's where it grows from. There's still unarmed black people being killed by the establishment. So until that's done, you know.
So what's the last year been like for you in quarantine during the pandemic? Have you found ways to amuse yourself, or what have you been doing?
I learned how to write with my left hand. Yeah, that was interesting.
Really?
Yeah, every morning I write with my left hand. And then just kind of got really in myself. This is the first time I've been able to sit down. You know, I've been like kind of nonstop since 16 years old. So it's the first time you know, sit still and go, whoa, what am I doing? What am I doing here? It's kind of the first time I prioritized myself because there was just no work. And so I was like, oh, wow, like I've really kind of like let myself go, but not in a kind of like a fitness way, just in a kind of like a getting connection way. And
I found that so interesting that he said he's learned that during the quarantine, he learned to write with his left hand. What an interesting challenge for your brain. I would have never thought, I am naturally left-handed. I would have never thought I'm going to learn to write right-handed. Actually, when I was a kid, when I was in grade school, the left-handed kids were forced to stay after school, and they would literally tie our left hands behind our back. Literally, I was tied to the chair and forced to write with my right hand, and I just never could do it. So I don't know if that's something I could train myself to do like Daniel Kaluuya did or not. We'll see if he grabs the Oscar tonight with his left or right hand when they call his name, which I suspect that they will. I also suspect that they will be calling Chloe Zhao up to the stage to collect an Oscar for directing the movie Nomadland. We also spoke with her about this beautifully shot, very touching and extremely thought-provoking motion picture.
I think it's great. I think it's very reassuring that if you do something, you stay true to the things you love, and you work with people that you love, and you find your tribe.
And the awards this year reflected a record number of women directors being nominated this year. What does that represent? What do you think that means?
I believe there's an yin and yang in all of us. It's only going to be a matter of time that we want to find some kind of balance. It's in human nature to want to see stories from different perspectives. I don't think something can be stopped. I'm so fortunate to be able to do the thing that I love to do, to tell stories for a living. And if this means more women like me that get to do it, it's great.
What about what are you most proud in this film? I mean, it's a very, very simple story, but it's so engaging and brings people so in. I think it's the storytelling that does that. But I'd be curious to see, you know, what elements you are most proud of.
I think what drives me to make films, say if I drive through a small town in Nebraska, I'm always curious, how do those folks want to be remembered? How does that town want to be remembered? Because it's a town that's disappearing, right? And I'm just really proud that I think we captured a time in this country, a group of people that might not be here in another decade, a way of life, and them saying goodbye to it and finding a new way for themselves. And that for that generation, that baby boomer generation, has gone through so much with the changes that happened in this country, both the triumphs and the heartbreaks. And I think we've captured that for them, you know, and that, I'm super proud of that.
Chloe Zhao, the director of the movie Nomadland, she's been winning awards throughout the award season. I am predicting that she will win Best Director tonight. We'll see. As I've been mentioning, I know a lot of you aren't into award shows. You know, you're interested in, you know, the basics on it, but not going to sit for a four-hour award show. I will be doing that, and I'll recap it all for you tomorrow morning, both on Bob Surratt Show and my regular segment between 8 and 8:30, and also tomorrow morning on the WGN Morning News. We'll get the winners, losers, and any highlight moments that there are. We'll have it all for you then. And when we come back, the Chicago Tribune's food and dining reporter, Louisa Chu, joins us to talk about their annual takeout awards next. Who's hungry? It's time to eat. Welcome into Food Time, Chicago Radio's original cooking and dining show. Actually, this Oscar Sunday is the anniversary of our food show. The very first food segment that we ever did. This was shortly after Roy Leonard retired in 1996, I think it was. I really should have kept better records through the years. I believe it was 1996. The very first food show that we ever did was a food from the movies segment. So it's, you know, kind of this segment's anniversary today, being Oscar Sunday again today. It is the award-winning All Things Edible program heard every Sunday at this time, and we jump into lots of different subjects today. We're happy to have joining us on the show Louisa Chu, who is the food and dining reporter for the Chicago Tribune. She's also a co-host of the Chewing podcast, which is available as well. Louisa, nice to have you back on the show. Hello.
Thank you so much, Dean. What an auspicious day.
Right? It really is, in many ways is. Let me start off by asking you, what is your do you have favorite food scenes or food movies that you must have been influenced by over the years?
Oh, so many. You know, I mean, I think that like a lot of people, Big Night was, so moving. You remember? Yeah,
it's my favorite. It's my favorite food movie.
Your favorite?
That's my favorite food movie. I could watch that movie every single day for the rest of my life.
Well, we might have to, meet up in soon now, vaccinated, masked up, and get one of those big giant timbales that's a huge event, right?
It used to there was a restaurant that was in Little Italy that, like, once a month or something, they would do a Big Night, and they would recreate the foods that are served in that movie, including the timbale, which is sort of a... It's layers of different things that are all cooked in a giant pot, and then you turn it upside down, and it looks like a drum. That's why it's called timbale. And you cut slices of it. You cut it like a cake to reveal the different layers in it. But this restaurant now is closed. I don't even remember what the restaurant's called now. It's been closed for a while. But somebody needs to bring that back once things get back to normal again.
Yeah, when we can all gather in big groups and eat giant, pots of baked pasta together, drum size, big pastas. But yeah, I love that.
What other food scenes or movies do you like?
You know, so many. I mean, and a lot of them, not only, of course, for the food, but, for like the acting, the scenes that went in there. And of course, there's got to be like the original Willy Wonka, it's such a fantasy, which is like so hilarious because like as a kid, it's on one level. And then when you're an adult, you're like, oh, is this a little darker?
You realize different things in it. But, I people have been calling and texting in different responses, and many of my favorite movies of all time are food movies, really, or have fantastic. Maybe that says something about me, but, Moonstruck came up with its many food scenes.
For sure.
Big Night has come up. We've had several people text in the cafeteria scene in When Harry Met Sally. I'll have what she's having.
Oh. Yeah.
One of the classic scenes of all time.
at Katz's for sure, you know, where they have that big sign above the table where you can sit there and maybe recreate the scene.
Right, you know what I mean? Right. I think they think they do have a section now where it was actually filmed and you can take pictures there and all of that. So, so it's a big night, you know, for that reason with the Oscars. And I also have to think that I wonder if it means something to you just personally as an Asian American woman that so many women have been nominated this year and so many women of Asian descent are being noted. And as I mentioned in the segment right before you, I believe that Chloe Zhao is going to wind up winning Best Director tonight.
Yeah, that seems the way it is, you know, leaning if we were betting people. You know, and listening to some of the stories behind, of course, you know, why there was a chance for a lot of, you know, typically underrepresented people, Asian American women, you know, as well as, of course, you know, the Korean-American film, Minari, which is an American film. It's all an American film, even though it's foreign language, you know? I mean, because, you know, a lot of those films, the bigger films, they're like, oh, we're going to wait. These littler films, you know, they're like, oh, you got to go now. And so, absolutely, I am fingers crossed that, that it is going to be a night where people who have done really beautiful and moving work are going to get the recognition they deserve, you know, that might be like another silver lining from a very dark year.
Absolutely. And it's got to feel good to see groups that have been underrepresented in the past getting their day, getting their night tonight, albeit at probably what will be the weirdest Academy Awards ceremony of all time. We'll see.
Yeah, exactly. We can only hope that it'll be the weirdest. But, you know, I mean, lots of weird things have happened over the past few years. And so this will be good practice, I suppose, for, you know, future weirdness. And but hopefully, you know, like good weirdness coming up. So but yeah, absolutely.
Well, speaking of awards, the Takeout Awards that the Tribune has been putting on announced its winners recently. Explain what the Takeout Awards are, first of all.
Well, it's typically it's this past year. Again, talk about a weird year. Typically, it's been our like our Chef Awards. We actually have it in two parts, where it was usually a Critics' Choice Award, where it was like best chefs, best restaurants, you know, that sort of thing, but kind of, you know, more traditional. And then we had a Reader's Choice Awards, where then all of our, you know, readers, our audience would then, you know, we'd have a list of nominees and then you could vote. But then this past year, we were really thinking, you know, is it fair? You know, do we actually continue with our traditional awards? And so we talked about it and decided that, yeah, people really need to be recognized for the incredible work that they did. You know, and I know you've talked about it before, and it's, you know, really about the essential workers, some of the people who had to take, you know, public transportation for minimum wage jobs. They didn't know customers were going to be, you know, able to come in. And almost all through this time, openings, closings, you know, dining rooms open, closed, shut down, open again. Just about everybody was open for takeout. And so we wanted to recognize people for our Critics' Choice and for our Reader's Choice Awards, and made it the Takeout Awards.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, so it was a couple of two collections, and then we're going to have an event tomorrow night, Monday night, that's free. People can register for free. That's going to benefit, again, a community group that really rose and met the challenge of this past year and created micro grants to help people who are really in need in the industry.
Yeah, this is a virtual event that you're going to be putting on tomorrow night, right?
Yes, absolutely. We are still doing the virtual events. So it is in line with our, you know, Takeout Awards because, you know, some of your favorite places are still not open yet for dining rooms. For example, Lula Cafe in the Logan Square neighborhood, you know, still has not invited people back in for dining. And then, you know, but you know, just about everybody is open for takeout, whether it's food or drink. We're going to actually say, you know, raise a toast. So I'm going to be swinging by Lost Lake, which is the cocktail bar in the Logan Square Avondale border, and pick up some takeout cocktails because we can do that now. It's like,
right,
you know, new
right.
rules.
That's one of the upsides of that we're now able to take our booze with us when we go. I was reading an article, I forget where, about mm-hmm. White Fence Farm restaurant.
Oh,
which
yeah,
is a long time Chicago staple. That mm-hmm. You know has they closed during the pandemic. But they just recently reopened carryout and yeah. At some of their satellite locations, and I guess they're trying to do it now at the Romeoville location as well. But they mm-hmm. estimated they lost in excess of $2 million in sales yeah. in the last year. Just to kind of put into perspective the kinds of losses that some of these restaurants have sustained yeah. During the pandemic.
Absolutely. And of course, longtime Chicago residents like us remember the White Fence Farm commercials that showed right. their, you know, their chicken and their family style meals, you know.
Right.
And but yeah, it's pretty amazing. You know, it's very sobering, the losses that a lot of longtime family-owned businesses have experienced and yet are still surviving. Some places, I talked to, did fairly well because they had always been takeout only, for example, and others have really struggled and continue to struggle. But I think we're starting to see a new phase. Where people are reopening and starting to, you know, not only restaurants, but, you know, of course, not only places are open, but like their customers have been really affected. Everybody was pretty cautious and careful. We didn't know what was going to happen next. So, right. you know, should we spend big? And I was always happy to spend the Tribune money and tip very well whenever possible.
Right. Right.
But that's not always for everyone.
Right.
You know?
Share that Tribune generosity that we all know so well.
Absolutely.
Right, right.
You know, Tribune tips minimum 20% when I'm dining out on their dime.
Exactly, exactly.
Yeah.
I was talking with, I had ordered some takeout at a restaurant, mm-hmm. and the owner was telling me, the restaurant, you know, it was limited seating. It wasn't packed like it used to be back in the day, but it still mm-hmm. was packed, and they had an outdoor area that was pretty packed. And I said, wow, mm-hmm. business is pretty good. He goes, well, we're struggling. We can't get yeah. people to work here. Like their former staffs had to find other jobs when the restaurants were either closed or down to nothing. Mm-hmm. So now they can't go back to their, you know, they've gone back to their previous staff, but they've got mm-hmm. new jobs now. They've moved on to something else. So this yeah. particular restaurant was struggling to find people to work at the restaurant now.
Yeah. It's about every bar and restaurant I'm hearing, and it is in the Chicago area and the suburbs, and really, you know, we're seeing it pretty much all across the country
yeah.
because, you know, typically, there, you know, for people who haven't had a chance to work in the restaurant industry, you know, there is a tipped minimum wage, and then that's made up with tips. And so, you know, what we've seen now have really been, you know, exactly what you're saying. It's like a lot of people, when the unemployment benefits ran out, they had to take other jobs that they're committed to now.
Right.
And then also then comparing what they are making, perhaps if they have a chance, compared to tip minimum wage. That's, you know, that's a real difficult decision, I think, for a lot of people, even if they loved the, you know, bar and restaurant industry. That's a challenging situation, yeah. especially because, you know, I mean, even though many people are vaccinated now, that's, you know, we know that a lot of front of the house people who have direct contact with customers, they're still getting through that phase and getting vaccinated. So, and, you know, we know that can be a challenge.
Yeah, they're not quite out of the woods yet. It's a very complex coming back.
Yeah.
Let's talk about some of the winners in your takeout awards. For example, in the category of best comfort food in a box, the winner was Virtue Restaurant. Tell us a little about that.
Yeah, so Virtue Restaurant is an American Southern comfort food restaurant on the south side of Chicago in the Hyde Park neighborhood, owned by Chef Eric Williams, who has been best known for as a fine dining chef. And this was his first restaurant that he opened on his own. And he was a previous Best Chef of the Year winner in our Critics' Choice Awards. And when I talked to him, and he has gone through like every single phase of, pandemic restaurant opening where, he had to close his, beautiful dining room, which, pre-pandemic was like, so crowded and like so comforting. And like you run into people not only in the neighborhood, but like people who made it a, destination to, if they were just visiting. And then he closed for a bit and was only cooking for healthcare workers, because he had a doctor who was one of his regular customers who said, hey, the cafeterias are closed. Can you do something to help us? So he did that, and then takeout only. And I mean, so he's gone through every single phase, and beautifully. He was surprised that he won this award, because he just works and works and works. And even though he's been doing well, he said, thanks to the generosity of not only customers, but people who even just drop off like notes saying thank you for what you're doing extra tips.
Yeah.
So, he doesn't like to say what his signature dish is, but some of the most popular dishes are like the classics, macaroni and cheese and collard greens and this beautiful piece of blackened catfish on this Carolina gold rice, almost like a risotto, and then barbecue carrot.
Oh, nice. That's a nice touch of red carrots.
Yeah.
It's a Virtue Restaurant at 1462 East 53rd Street. Another category that I found interesting in this pizza-rich town that we have is Best New Pizza and Most Creative Pandemic Patio. The winner was the Pizza Friendly Pizza Restaurant.
Yeah. So, again, another pandemic pivot by a chef and restaurant owner who was, they're best known for finer dining. And there are very few foods that we kind of accepted as like, it's okay to stuff it in a box and we'll take it to go and we'll eat it back home. Pizza was definitely one of them.
Yeah, and, of course.
So the chef at Oriole, Noah Sandoval, with his restaurant partner, Bruce Finkelman, opened a pizza restaurant and an alleyway window where you can walk up to get this amazing pizza. You wouldn't think like, let's go down this alley and get some pizza. This is a great thing.
Speak for yourself. I don't know.
Well, you're right. I know. Well, who am I kidding? We would totally do that.
That's where the best pizza lives.
I know. And so they did not only beautiful pizza, but they scrubbed down that Chicago alleyway window. And so not only were you able to get beautiful pizza, but like really of the moment that this experience was like, again, rising to the challenge and exceeding it. So absolutely stunning.
Yeah. Pizza Friendly Pizza, 1039 North Western Avenue in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
I also found very interesting your Best New Sandwich category, a Croatian themed coffee shop was the winner.
Yeah. So my food and dining colleague, Nick Kindlesberger, did a whole story about Best New Sandwiches. Because, again, there's like another food that really seemed to be like perfect if you had to do takeout was a sandwich.
Sure.
And so this restaurant was one of his favorite sandwiches from this past year. And so Croatia, we kind of think of it as being like, sort of more of like the meaty sausages, but they also have, which the sandwich absolutely has. And if you look at the picture on the Tribune website, you definitely will see these you know, beautiful, charred, meaty sausages, but also the bread, which is wonderful. It's kind of like a pita-style bread, mm-hmm. but, like, you know, with, like, a nice, soft-filled crumb. And so, absolutely, they just have this, like, beautiful kind of a sandwich, which really was, like, so unique and really kind of introduces people maybe to the food of Croatia that they may not have known. But absolutely, when you taste it, you're like, oh, yeah, I totally understand this. This is like, you know, sausage and bread and onion. I love it.
Yeah, but that, I mean, at first glance, I thought, oh, this is kind of a variation of a gyro sandwich. But it's not. I mean, it's ground meat, a ground beef sausage with onions and, you know, sort of this spread that is a little bit, I guess you might call like a gyro sandwich. But then there is this clotted cream that also goes into it. That sounds, yes. And that all goes into this pita, what is like a pita pocket. That sounds like heaven in a bun.
Right. Yeah, exactly. It is just unfamiliar enough that you feel like this is an adventure, but familiar enough to say, okay, I understand this. I get this, like, deep down. You may not know what kaimak is, but then you're like, oh yeah, this is kind of like, you know, sure. The white creamy sauce that I have had, like you're saying, on Chicago style gyro or gyro, yeah, or gyros, depending on how you pronounce it, right, you know, what area, right, of the city you're from.
Right, right. 94, it's this is 946 North Orleans, domachicago.com, mm-hmm, for more info. What are you guys working on over at the Tribune that we'll be seeing soon?
Well, in addition to the event tomorrow night, which, please, it's free to register. So please register for free. Make that suggested donation to Dish Roulette for Monday night. We're actually working on a few different things. So tomorrow, I'm going to be tasting a new Italian beefless sandwich from Bona Beef.
Oh, I heard about this. Bona Beef. It's a plant-based beef, right?
Yeah.
Hmm. Not sure.
It is.
Not sure how I feel about that.
Well, we'll see. You know, I mean, it looks beautiful. So Bona Beef has created what they're calling the beefless beef sandwich. And so the beefless beef is made out of seitan, which is wheat gluten, which is, right, a really old, like, you know, historic Chinese people invented it centuries ago. We've eaten it for a long time. It's you know, washed wheat gluten. Yeah. And when it's cooked down and slice and you put it in that gravy, which is like theirs, is, you know, it's a vegetable base with olive oil, and then you put giardiniera on there, yeah, with the bread. So it looks good. I'm going to taste it tomorrow, so we'll see.
Oh, I can't wait to hear what you have to say about that.
Me too. So that's launching tomorrow. And then also my colleague Nick Kindlesberger is working on a Best New Burgers story. That'll be out in a few weeks or so, maybe sometime soon. So we have, you know, both spectrums. You know, we've got the beefless beef for Meatless Monday, or what I like to call Meat-Free Monday.
Yeah.
And then he's got the, you know, the meaty burger sandwich. And then, you know, we've got a few surprises coming up soon. So
I'm gonna throw into your burger article, your colleague's burger article.
Oh,
I went to,
yeah,
Hackney's in Glenview,
oh, yeah,
you know, famous for their burgers. Very disappointed. Yep. I was very disappointed in the burgers. Very disappointed. And last night I was at a friend's house in Old Town. We, yeah, ordered some burgers from a place called Declan's. It's a pub. It's an Irish, mm-hmm, pub. We ordered some burgers. Maybe one of the best burgers I've had in years. Delicious.
That's great to know.
Absolutely delicious.
I got to say, Hackney's is an old school burger, but the onion loaf is where it's at.
The onion loaf, right? The onion loaf. Everybody had an onion loaf on their table.
Yeah.
Yeah, because really, after you eat that, do you really want to eat anything else anyway?
That's all you need.
I think it's got most of your basic food groups in there.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's interesting. That'll be a very interesting. We'll look forward to that. The the Takeout Award winners are all at ChicagoTribune.com. The virtual event celebrating the winners of the Takeout Awards is tomorrow. And do you go to Tribune.com, ChicagoTribune.com, or is there someplace else we go for that to sign up?
ChicagoTribune.com/takeout event. We made it so easy.
Very good. It's Louisa Chu, the food and dining reporter and co-host of the Chewing Podcast. Always nice to talk to you, Louisa. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Dean.
Have a great day today. And that's going to wind it up for us.